Good morning. All right, now we're going to go into chapter 2. No power. And this is a particularly one of my favorite principles. The discovery of this principle really opens up the doors to heaven here and now. And that's just not poetic licensure or poetic talk. That's just the truth. I told you last week that we were going to jump into the fire this week, and I meant every word of it. And I have so much underlined and starred and bracketed and arrowed in my book that I hesitate to get started because I don't want to read the entire chapter to you. You've already read it. And yet there's so many important things in here. Now, the first thing that I wanted to comment on is on page 19. Whenever truth is offered to the human mind wants to crucify that truth because the truth demands that the human mind die. Now, a lot of people think that, well, I don't know what they think, to tell you the truth. I really don't know. But I know that I comment, and others comment, that the human being, the personal sense of self, the false self, has to die. And I don't ever get the question raised, how do you die? I mean, if I do, it's very, very seldom. Most of the time, people just sort of say, well, okay, and they go on being a human being. I can tell by their questions and comments. Sometimes somebody says, wow, that's really a struggle for me. And that's because they've entered into it. But that's not too common. I'd say out of 132 people, maybe not even as many as are in this class have asked the question, just exactly how do I die? But when you do, he says, truth doesn't promise anybody that you can go on being a good, comfortable human being. Truth doesn't promise anybody that you can have a lot of money, a lot of fame, a lot of health, and a lot of self-indulgence. Truth doesn't promise anybody a life of ease in matter. It promises a terrific struggle, a struggle between the spirit and the flesh until the crucifixion. That is the final tearing down of humanhood, the final destruction of man whose breath is in his nostrils. After which comes a very barren period, a wilderness period in the tomb, a period of desolation. Now, that sounds like something I'd like to do. How about you? I mean, what's he telling us here? He's saying, okay, if you get involved in truth and you really get involved in it, all you're going to have to do is die. And what you can look forward to is not a comfortable human life, demonstrating health and companionship and wealth. Oh no, here's the promise. Joel's giving it to us. You're going to have a terrific struggle, a struggle between the spirit and the flesh, until the crucifixion, after which will come a very barren period, a wilderness period in the tomb, a period of complete desolation. But after the 3 days, there comes a resurrection. And even in the resurrection, you carry around a torn body and maybe a torn reputation. Oh, gee, what that sounds like. Where do I sign? Where do I sign up for this? This sounds pretty good. No, it doesn't, does it? It doesn't. Only those that have the desire for God and God alone are ready for this book, this transition, this death of a personal sense of self. And let me tell you, it is a struggle. It does not want to die. Now, this that he described here, when he talked about a terrific struggle, a crucifixion, a barren period, a wilderness period, a period of desolation, this has to do with Revelation, the book of Revelation. You remember our Armageddon and the terrific struggle? That book was not about the end of the world. Well, in one sense it was, because when a personal sense of self dies, then this world dies with it. I don't remember what character that was. It wasn't Chicken Little, but one of the Aesop's fables, someone was saying, the world is ending, the world is ending, when actually they were ending. And it's the same. And so John, in the book of Revelation, was trying to tell us what we could look forward to. It really was Revelation. And so if you feel that you have entered the spiritual path so that you might come into the land of milk and honey, surprise, we're headed for a terrific struggle between the spirit and the flesh. Until, of course, that final crucifixion and resurrection and ascension, which comes as that personal sense of self dies. But then after all that comes the pure spiritual life, in which the promises are finally fulfilled. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will lead you beside the still waters and green pastures. My presence will go before you to make the crooked places straight. I have never seen the righteous begging bread. And so he says at the bottom of this page, I'm speaking now, not only to those sitting here in this room, but to all the students who are listening to this, and who may someday read it in print. And so he's speaking to you, and he's speaking to me. He's speaking to us when he says, we are called upon by our teaching, that would be the infinite way, to go out into the world and witness sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, wars, spiritual wickedness in high places, and yet look through these appearances and say, oh, no. No, I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of Israel. And that's what we're called upon to do. Now, he goes into quite a bit on how we have to stand by each other and hold each other up when we slip or we fall. And when reading this, I was wondering, I don't have the dates, but I suspect that this was before he had a heart attack. You know, Joel had a heart attack, and he went in the hospital and bounced right back into business. But how many people do you think said, well, gosh, if he was living these principles, how could that happen? And walked away, rather than standing by him and lifting him up. All of us, every single one of us, all nine of us here, and everyone that's ever walked this path are subject to temptation. Because the temptation to believe in a life apart from God comes at us practically 24 hours a day and always seems to find our weak spot. If there's a little bit of fear over finances, if there's a fear over supply, and that of course is much, much more than just money, that's the area that's going to hit us. Oh my God, will I have enough? And if we succumb to that temptation, then we go out and we try to manufacture some rather than living by grace. And there's nothing wrong with that. We manufacture it. Everything's fine. Except we missed our opportunity to live by grace. But it'll roll around again and we'll get the opportunity again. Now, if somebody's problem is in the area of, or if their weakness is in the area of health or life, then of course that's where it's going to hit. And we're going to see a separate sense of life, one that's diseased or in pain or aging or having one difficulty or another. If someone's got a problem in the area of, or if their weakness is in the area of relationships, companionships, well, that's the area it's going to hit. So we see we can all be tempted into believing in a separate sense of life, of self, of activity, of being. And in fact, we are tempted, as I say, pretty much 24/7. But once in a while, we succumb to that temptation and are momentarily hypnotized. Now, that's the time for all of us to lift up that one that is being momentarily hypnotized. They don't want to be hypnotized. You know when you succumb to it, you don't want to be. So why should we stand there and judge and say, oh my God, I thought he was a spiritual leader. But if he had a heart attack, he's not living this. Well, that's not true. So, as Jesus said, could you not stand with me 1 hour? Pray with me 1 hour? And so all of us in here, we need to do that for each other. This is a good place to practice that. All right. Now, he says over here on page 21, where two or more are gathered together in my name, wherever there is a uniting in spiritual consciousness, the power and the presence of spirit is far more in evidence than otherwise. And of course, that would be us. So I fully expect the presence and power of spirit to be far more in evidence with us than it would be alone. He says on 22, the Spirit made evident as your individual being. It's the second paragraph. Christ, the anointed Jesus, in other words, the Spirit made evident as your individual being. Now look, here's what I want to bring out. We have two choices. We can live as a human being. And that means this. It means my human mind, or the human mind, makes decisions and acts through this body. Right? It carries out plans and ideas and desires. Some of them may be even good desires, such as helping someone down the street. However, if we live by the human mind, we live by world mind. Because the human mind and its thoughts are always about the world, or people, places, conditions, things. All of that has to do with the world. So the world mind really is the human mind. And that's our choice. We can live a human life. We've done it for centuries, all of us. And perhaps for the better part of this life. But if we live by the human mind, we're living by good and evil. We're living by the pairs of opposites. And we're usually busily involved trying to make one opposite into the other opposite. And so we're going to have a universe that's sometimes good and sometimes bad. You will experience good. You might find that companion you've always looked for. You might find a raise in your income. You might find by doing aerobics and watching your diet, you have pretty good health. But of course you're going to find the other too, aren't you? That relationship is going to end or become a problem. The health is going to deteriorate. The finances are going to disappear. It's the nature of the world. It's spinning plates on sticks. And this one wobbles, we run over there and get it going. Oh no, the other one's wobbling, we fix that. Oh no, two of them are going. And look out, one of them is going to crash. Well, that's life as we live it by the world mind, which is the human mind. That's one choice. But we have another choice. One that we weren't aware of for a long time. And that choice is to come up above that human mind, first only for brief seconds in our meditations. But in that space, in that place, in that secret place, up above the human thought, that's where we experience the presence of God. And the presence of God moves through or as spirit and manifests itself as Christ, the Son of God, or the manifestation of God. And in that life, we are more or less just a witness, a silent witness, God moving as spirit, manifesting its Christ. And that's the life that we all are walking towards. And so when he says the spirit made evident as your individual being, that's what he's talking about. That's the consciousness we have to attain and live in. Now, when we do that, he says we'll enjoy 90% of harmony. Not 100, because this tempter is still around making all its noise. Now, over here on page 23, and I think I mentioned it, and if I didn't, I will say it again. This book is designed to take you from the second degree, the second stage of the spiritual path, into the third degree. And so here he's going to talk about the second degree. Just think, we arrive at this place. Just think, through my work, my studies, through my new religion, or a new teaching, I have arrived at a place where I am physically well, morally well, financially all right. Human relationships are much better than they ever were. Isn't it beautiful? Isn't this a beautiful world? And that's where we think we have arrived. And if we have been in this for quite some time, perhaps we have been just coasting along in the second degree. But he says, if we're alert and we're alive, we will soon find out that it never was the purpose of God to make us humanly comfortable. It never was the purpose of God to give us an abundance of health and food and clothing and housing and companionship and say, now rot away down there until you're 80 years and 10 and come home. That never was the purpose of God. Never. Now here's something that we don't like to hear. God has no pleasure in your happiness. God has no pleasure in your prosperity. God has no pleasure in your health. God is spirit and has no pleasure except in the attainment of spiritual consciousness or spiritual life, spiritual awareness and spiritual being, which is entirely separate and apart from a good life of humanhood. Now, do we see this? Do you see the distinction? There are two roads. One is a human life, lived out from the mind, and the mind manifests its images of good and evil. That's the sleeping life. That's the life that all of humanity is living and has lived for countless ages. But then there are those who are awakening to another level, and that level is God itself moving as an in-spirit manifesting the Christ life. And that life has no pleasure in your health or your prosperity or your happiness. That life has pleasure only in your attainment of spiritual awareness, the awareness of this presence manifesting itself. So these are the two lives. Which one do you want? I know which one I want. Now listen to this. I said you're going to be in the fire, and you are. You might as well join me. I've been here in these flames for a while. Now you can step on in too, because the flames won't kindle upon you. But listen. Now be assured of this. God is an infinite power, and in God's domain, that power is made evident. And beside it, there is no other power. And so, when you see physical or human discords and inharmonies, it must bring to your mind that in that realm, God is not infinite. And perhaps it's because God doesn't even operate in that realm. Humanhood is a sense of self separate and apart from God. Now, here's the thing. We've only gotten to page 24. Now listen. In the last chapter, that's in chapter 8, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway, because you already know it. We are told that the entire human scene, just like he tells us in the New Horizon in the Infinite Way book, the entire human scene is a series of universal beliefs. And that's what it is. And so as you look out here at people, places, things, conditions, some good, some bad, some harmonious, some inharmonious, some young, some old. The entire human scene, even the very best of the best person, and the worst of the worst. You can pick Genghis Khan and Hitler, and you can pick Mother Teresa and Gandhi. The very best, the very worst, both are made of the same fabric, the same substance, and that substance is universal, a series of universal beliefs in good and evil. That's the fabric, just like if you made a quilt out of a fabric. The fabric of this entire human scene is a series of universal beliefs. Now, knowing that, don't you see how ridiculous it is to pray to God to do something in that scene? How could you ever believe? When Joel told us you cannot add God to your humanhood, he realized this. And I am realizing this. You can't pull God into a series of universal beliefs. Ever. God never operates in those beliefs. God doesn't operate in that fabric. You see? All the prayers, millions, billions, trillions of prayers to try to get God to operate in a series of universal beliefs, in the fabric of illusion or nothingness. A total waste of time. A total waste of lifetimes. And then we're mad at God because God doesn't respond. Seems to have a deaf ear. All right. So something else has to happen, doesn't it? Now, so here we are. Oh, yeah. He says, humanhood, with its birth, maturity, decay, and death, is purely an illusion, even when it's a healthy illusion or a wealthy illusion. See, it's made of the same fabric, no matter which side of the pole it is. Good or evil is made of the same fabric, a series of universal beliefs. And God will never operate in that. So if you look out at the world, at these tragedies happening, where is God? Well, not in that series of universal beliefs, not in that fabric. God is outside of that. Now, so here we are standing in the second degree, ready to jump into the fire of the terrific struggle to awaken out of the fabric of universal beliefs so that we can live in the realm where God does function. And so, we come to that part of the message of the infinite way, which is its deep inner revelation, which is its deep inner unfoldment. And for those who have the capacity to carry on, in spite of the battle between the spirit and the flesh, it holds out the possibility of spiritual attainment. Now listen. And he goes on and on about health is just the opposite end of the stick of ill health. And so what we've been talking about. So go over that. Know that. Know that like you know your middle name, because then at least you'll stop trying to pray to get God to operate in that scene. Now, on 25, he says, in making this practical in our living, we come to a realization that at first astounds one. At least it astounded me. You remember yesterday that we stayed on the subject of one power, but actually, that isn't the goal. It isn't our ultimate goal to think of God as one power. The ultimate goal is when we come to the realization that God is no power at all. That is when we come to the realization of absolute truth. All right, so in the second degree, we were looking at God as a power to change these things. We were looking at God as a power to dissolve this series of universal beliefs and turn them into good. But here in the third degree, the ultimate goal, the absolute truth, is God is no power at all. And now you understand why I uploaded that talk, The Non-Power of Silence, because a year or two ago I discovered that silence, which is that place where God does operate, the realm where God is an absolute realm of no power. Because in my meditations, when I attained the silence, it didn't necessarily mean that there weren't thoughts still going on. And it didn't even mean that I was sitting still somewhere. Often I attained the silence on accident while driving along. So I started to look at that. Well, if silence is not an absence of sound or an absence of thought, what is silence? And finally it came to me. Silence is that place of no power. No power of any kind. And so that's where he's trying to bring us as a class, as a student body. He was trying to lift people out of that second degree where they try to apply truths and principles and God in order to change an appearance into harmony, trying to use a God power, even in their meditations, even in our meditations. He's trying to lift us out of that into a realm of no power. No power. Absolutely no power. Just a realm of is, a realm of being. It is in that state, when you are resting back, in absolute no power, that you become a silent witness as God moves through spirit and manifests its Son. You see? Okay. Now, probably you'll have to hear that a lot more times, but don't worry, this is a big book. All right, so it really isn't true then that God uttered his voice and the earth melted, is it? Because that would be the belief that God is a power over this earth and has the power to dissolve it. That's not really what happens. I know we've all been conditioned to believe that, but now we're going to come up a little higher and see something else. All right. I made a note on page 27. It says, "Our work is not the seeking, although it was legitimate in the early days of our studies. It is not legitimate to a disciple. It's not legitimate to a student who is along on the path. To the student along on the path, all desires must drop away. In the realization, I seek only the revelation of that which is." All right, and the revelation of that which is does not come unless you attain that state of non-power, no power. And since he says those that are along on the path are disciples, then that makes you and I a disciple if we are following this. Now, in our treatment work, he says, as you will learn, those who haven't already learned it, we never take consideration with health or supply or morals or appetite. Never. Never. Now we know why. Because you cannot pull God into a series of universal beliefs. Ever. He says, I have never known but one way of helping, whether it's patients, students, or family. And that way is to be still, to get silent, to retire within myself until such a time as I feel a stirring, which is the evidence to me of the presence of the activity of Christ. Now that's all I know. You see? It is when you are still, when you get silent, when you are exercising no power of any kind, not looking for a power of any kind. Power is completely gone. You are simply resting in is, that which is. Then you feel a stirring. You have the conscious awareness of the presence or the activity of Christ. Now that's all I know. That's exactly the way it works and exactly the way it feels. In the third degree. He says, I don't care whether the activity of Christ appears as money, health, home, or companionship, or the winning of a lawsuit. It makes no difference. He's only concerned with one thing. Once I have the feeling of the presence of the activity of the Christ in me, I know the need has been met. All right, so this is the consciousness we are going to attain by the end of this series of classes. We are going to know only one thing. When we enter the realm of no power, the realm of is, and sit there, rest there, so that the water is completely still, then the Spirit will move over the face of the waters, and we will be aware of a rippling, a movement, a stirring, a quickening, which is evidence of the presence of the Spirit or the activity of Christ. And that's all we're going to know. But we are going to have that experience on a daily, sometimes hourly basis. We are going to be that consciousness of no power. He says on 28, the secret, and whenever he says the secret, I pay attention, I sit up and watch and listen, is that in the moment that you achieve the realization of God's presence, you are where there is no need of power, because there are no discords. Is that clear? Probably not, but it will become clear as you enter a new practice. We are going to enter a new practice. And it's really wonderful. You're going to see the hand of God. All right. 29, he says, that's the mystery of the inner working of the infinite way. The infinite way is not a way to contact God and get the presence and power of God to do something to this series of mental images or universal beliefs. No, the infinite way acknowledges with the Master. Don't ever say that something's subject unto you through my name. Don't ever say that. Wherever the presence of God is, there's no need for any power, because there is only harmony. In other words, listen, we are going to gain the consciousness, this consciousness. God is light. And in him is no darkness at all. And God is omnipresence. Omnipresent. We are going to gain the conscious awareness, the conscious feel of omnipresent light in which there is no darkness at all. And we are going to rest in that awareness as we feel the Spirit move. Do you see? Beautiful. All right, now, do you see what I mean, he says, when I say God is not really a power? It appears on earth as if it were a power doing something to something, but it isn't a power at all. Now, our desire must be limited to the desire to experience God or its individualization, Christ. All right, we are not going to we are entering this third degree where we are going to leave behind us everything we have learned about applying truth to problems. We are going to leave behind us everything we have ever learned about God as one power. We are going to leave all of that behind us to enter this new consciousness, which is described beautifully in the chapter, The New Horizon. And that's the consciousness that God is light and in Him is no darkness at all. And God is omnipresent light. And as I come up over or out of the human mind and rest in this consciousness of light, of no power, then the stone is cut out of the mountain without hands. The awareness bubbles up from consciousness, from the well of consciousness, and we feel that spirit, that presence, moving. And then out here, it sure looks like it's power over something, but it's not. That's, again, just the appearance. Get it in your mind now. My kingdom is not of this world. I have no demonstration out here to make ever. Ever. Now I have one demonstration and one only, and that is to rest back in a kingdom of no power until I have the conscious feeling of spirit moving. That's it. That's the only demonstration from now on. I don't know if you can get this, but you need to look at this paragraph at the bottom, almost at the bottom, of page 29, because there's a deep secret in here. Now just listen to the Master. I am the bread of life. I am the water. I am the wine. I am the truth. Now, is there any evidence that there that Christ sends us bread, wine, and water? No, then there would be bread, wine, water separate and apart from Christ, and there isn't. No, God cannot send you something into this series of universal beliefs. There is no demonstration to make here. We're leaving this behind now. My kingdom is not of that. My kingdom is in here, in the invisible realm. I have one demonstration, to be a silent witness of spirit moving over the face of the deep, and God manifesting through spirit the Christ, its Son, eternal in the heavens. That is my demonstration. And so he says, the Christ is the very body of our lives. Christ is the very loaf of bread we are eating. Christ is the very water we are drinking. Christ is the very home in which we live. Christ is the very substance of our friendships and of our relationships, when our relationships are built on spiritual quality. Now, go back again with me. We are not getting God to manifest in a series of universal beliefs. We are leaving that behind. No, we are now watching, witnessing, beholding in that silent place, in that realm of no power, as God manifests through the Spirit, manifests that invisible Christ presence. That is the substance of our universe. When we have that experience, we are going to the first chapter of Genesis in which pure God consciousness moves as a spirit over the face of the deep and manifests its perfect universe. And we are a witness of that. And then we discover that universe includes every good and perfect gift, which appears as supply, it appears as companionship, it appears as life, health, body. But we are not seeking any of that. We are seeking that inner experience now. Okay, so there are two different realms. We can live in the second chapter of Genesis, which is the human mind formed. And it's nasty. I've had enough of it. Good and bad and up and down. And oh my God, young and old and sick and well. I'm tired. I want to leave that realm. And you leave it by this inner transition to a new consciousness, which is really the old consciousness, the original consciousness, manifesting its glories. Now, that's a kingdom of heaven, a realm of heaven here and now. Now, where the battle comes in between the spirit and the flesh is that this involves a complete and total self-surrender of personal desires, ambitions, and hopes. You see, if you have the tiniest little, sneakiest little hope that God will manifest as rent by next Monday, you are going to have a battle. Go back again to the original infinite way where he talks about the battle will end if once you discover that you are to have no hope, no desire, no plans, no ideas. See, any kind of a hope is a little kind of movement on your part, isn't it? It's still a power, a personal wish. We want to be in that place of absolute no movement, no power. And then the glimpse. Ah, yes, spirit is on the scene. We have it. We feel it. We're aware of it. And then it manifests its perfect universe, which appears as every good and perfect gift. And so do we see now what seek the kingdom of God and everything else is included means? All right, so we don't want any desire, ambition, or hope. It's a strange thing to live as an absolute nothingness other than a beholder and a witness, and to discover that God is our allness, but it must be done. And again, he says it again on 31. In the message of the infinite way, there is no such thing as health or wealth. There is no such thing as safety or security. No such thing as peace, not in heaven or on earth. There is only one thing, this realization of the activity of the presence of the Christ, or that movement within, here and now. The realization of God's presence, union with God, conscious oneness with God. You say, we are already one with God, and it's true. But so is the man dying on the crucifix, or the man dying on the gallows. So is the man dying on the battlefront, one with God, but not consciously so. Consciousness is the secret word. Only what you are conscious of can you bring forth. God, I can't tell you how important that line is. Your conscious awareness, as you rest in that state of no power, when you feel that movement, that's your conscious awareness of it. And your conscious awareness of it makes it manifest. Not manifest in a series of universal beliefs, just manifest. And where the light shines, the darkness disappears. You're manifesting here. Really, okay, let's just get down to the nitty-gritty here, shall we? You are on earth, I am on earth, for one reason only. And that is not to have a good human life. We are on earth, I am on earth, you are on earth, for one reason only. To be that point where God consciousness manifests its Son, the living Christ. That is your reason. That is your fulfillment. And as you come into the consciousness where this happens on a daily basis, where Christ moves through the Spirit and manifests, where God moves through the Spirit and manifests the Christ, the living Son, as an actual experience both within and without, then you will be getting to the place where you graduate finally, and where I graduate finally. Okay? Now, if you're conscious of it, then you have the consciousness of it. And now we are seeking one thing only, the conscious awareness of the feeling of God's presence. No more demonstrations out here. None. Zero. Nada. We are seeking one demonstration, which he told us way back in Practicing the Presence. Demonstrate God. Finally, after all these many years, we understand what that means. We have one demonstration. My God, he wrote it all the way back there, and I'm just coming into the realization of it. Demonstrate God. Okay. So my only demonstration from now on is to be in a state of rest, in a realm of no power, where I rest back and witness the movement of God as Spirit manifesting the Christ. Therefore, he says, in thinking of peace, joy, success, opportunity, inspiration, health, harmony, wholeness, completeness, drop them as quickly as possible. Now, that's in this new consciousness that we are attaining. We are no longer going to pray or think or act or live like we used to. You are in the fire. You're going to develop a brand new way of living. And in regards to all these things, drop them as quickly as possible from your thought and say, no, 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 none of these things will satisfy me. One thing alone do I desire. My heart panteth after thee, O God. My soul longs for thee and thee alone, for God and for God alone. Then, in the realization of God, or the conscious awareness in this inner experience, everything, all things, every good and perfect gift is included. It has to. Do you see why the world rebels at this? Do you think that I haven't witnessed some of our friends write to me and say, oh, but you don't understand. I must have the rent on Saturday. I must have this job. I have to get rid of this pain. If only you'll take care of these things, then we can concentrate on finding God. And they don't understand when I say, I'm sorry. I don't know how to bring you these things. I've never learned how to demonstrate things. The only thing I've known since the beginning is when I made my contact with God, well, then harmony flowed. Because why? God manifested. And so our work now is to realize deep down to the depths of your being, my kingdom is no longer of this world, this series of universal beliefs. I'm done here. I'm done with it. I don't care if it destroys itself. I don't care. I'm done with it. Fine. Take everything. I'll be penniless on the streets, sick unto death, with nobody around, totally alone. I don't care. I don't care. I'm done. I'm graduating. I'm leaving you now. Bye. Have a good time. I have one demonstration, one work, and that is to feel that inner activity of Spirit in that realm of no power. And so he says on 32, do you see now how clear it becomes that a discipline is necessary so that we stop turning to God as if expecting something from God? when there is nothing to expect from God? And then he goes into this secret of knowing that the secret word is I am. And of course, because if you are in this realm where God is ising, well, then you know God is ising as spirit manifest as that which I am. And so, again, here we are again. You must discipline the mind to stop looking for good tomorrow. It won't come. You see, there's a lot of discipline here. Discipline, discipline, he keeps saying. Discipline, training. You're in the army now. Yeah, you are. You're a disciple. Now, he's telling us on 32 what state of consciousness we need to climb into and live in each and every meditation, as well as when we're walking around. See, we're going to become a very peculiar people. We're not going to be able to talk very much. We're going to be kind of silent and odd. Again, if you can't take that, then you won't be able to come up here to the third degree. But everyone in here is able to take this. I'm sure of it. And then on 33, he says, whatever happens to me must happen through consciousness, because you must feel it. You must be consciously aware of it. And so he says, instead of praying to God to put roses on my rose bush, which is like saying, God, please come into these universal beliefs and move them around for me, please. I'm not ready to leave this world. I just want you to fix it. And God must be saying, well, I don't know what God's saying. God just must be smiling, you know. Probably saying what Christ said. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I would have lifted you into the third degree, and ye would not. But perhaps now we are ready. Then, you see, he says down here, we are presented with physical disease in ourselves or in others. With this new consciousness, we say, disease? Health? What of it? My mind isn't on that. My kingdom's not of this world. My mind is on the realization of my Christhood, which was never born, does not age, and will never die. And so, now let me turn within, till I feel this and have the conscious awareness of this. That's my only demonstration. I am leaving this world. I am rising up into the kingdom here and now. And so as we are called upon to be healers for friends, for family, for patients, or students, always we will say, disease, health, poverty, abundance? What difference? I'm not looking to those. I'm not looking in that direction anymore. No, I have no demonstration to make in this world ever again. One demonstration, the inner conscious awareness of God, or I am. And finally, page 34, I made a note. We should read The New Horizon again, because he mentions that that's what is in that book, and that there are very few students that he finds studying it seriously. And yet, all of these principles in this chapter, No Power, are in that chapter. Okay, well, I did it again. I talked for, let's see, where are we? Exactly 1 hour. I don't know any other way to review these chapters. I don't know any way to do it. So, we're stuck with this, I guess. But know this. This is really something. If just us nine passed through this transition, this initiation into the third degree, into this higher consciousness, where we really did leave this world and enter a realm of no power, a realm where we are a silent witness, watching as God moves as the Spirit over the face of the deep and manifests its Son, the Christ, right in our experience and as our experience. Well, if nine of us did this, if nine of us do this at the same time, I'm thrown back again to what Joel said, and what I quoted on the list. Is there such a group finally on earth that can do this? Are we finally going to answer the Master's call? Yes, we will be gathered together as chicks under your wings. We are ready. Oh, come, dear Father, come. Manifest your glory. Manifest the glory that I had with thee before the world was. I thank you, my brothers and sisters in the light, and I am silent before his glory.